Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. These messages are intended to spark your own reflections and conversations all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime along with other resources and ways to keep the conversation going at fabricmpls.com/scraps.
Hey, good morning, Fabric. Merry almost Christmas. Good to see you all here today. And on the backside of your Sunday paper, which is what we call this programming type thing, there's an outline. You're welcome to follow along. For those of you listening on the podcast, if you look at the description, there's a link there to that outline as well, so you can find it as well. I'm Greg Meyer. Yeah, so these weeks leading up to Christmas, we have been diving into the story. The Christmas story, it's not just a story, it's like a conglomeration of stories that we sort of turned into one, but we're not only just looking at what the story tells us, we're looking a lot at what the story doesn't tell us, you know, all the little bits and pieces behind it, because, you know, it seems to be leading us on to asking some questions and thinking about some things, and this is sort of important to know, because when we talk about the Christmas story, the point of the Christmas story isn't what we often argue or debate about and lose a lot of time and energy around, and that is, you know, what's true about it, or how could that possibly have happened? Those are unhelpful questions, the wrong ways to explore. What it really is, it has a point. I mean, there's messages carried on there that it's asking, did you get that? Do you understand what we're trying to tell you about this, all right? So quit the other squabbles and focus on this. And so there are these messages that are encouraging us to engage with, and we've talked about them. You know, like there's a message that about, you know, what's Christmas really have to say to us from Joseph's perspective, and certainly one of those is that if you want to be about what Christmas is about, there's going to be some risk-taking involved. And then the week after, we looked at sort of what the stable represents, and it says if, you know, again, if you want to be about this Christmas stuff, there's something about this perfect imperfectness or imperfectly perfect that needs to be in there. Last week we talked about the star and the star letting us know that perspective matters. It really, really matters. This week we're looking at the people in the story that aren't there, which doesn't really make sense. But what about all those people that obviously were taking it in from the story's perspective that they're never even mentioned, all right? I mean, so you have the shepherds, sure. Okay, we know about them. But what about the shepherds' friends and their families? They're all the people that the shepherds went and told this to, okay? I mean, they saw something, heard something, knew something was going on. Well, what about you would have the kings come or these wise men, whoever they are, but they certainly didn't travel on their own. They would have these entourages that went with them and that were picking up stuff. Or we heard about Herod and Mark's Midrash that Mark and Chris read, you know, gives us this picture of the people that are surrounding Herod, his advisors and so on. They were counseling him on what this was meaning, what they're supposed to do, and witnessing his rage as he finds out that there's someone who maybe is trying to be king over Judah, and, you know, what's he going to do about that? And then, of course, there's all the people in Bethlehem, right? I mean, all the people maybe that also had animals in the stable that were coming to tend them and check on them. Maybe there's the people that lived next door to the inn or next door to the stable and that saw something was going on. You've got all of these, we call them the extras, right? All of these other people that knew something was happening but weren't really in on it. You know, they're the ones that are asking, what was that? You know, what was happening there? And there's a message from those people too. Those people in the story that aren't in the story. And the message from them is really this. It's that they're telling us this message from Christmas that is saying that this is for everyone. Not just the people that we think the story's about, but for everyone, right? Even the people that were got left out. So we're looking at those folks a little bit. And Christmas has, you know, well, we miss this because Christmas has this way of becoming a mere holiday. Not a bad thing, you know, where we gather with our friends and our family, we celebrate, we have fun, we enjoy, we indulge, we, as the saying goes, we make merry. You know, and that's all wonderful, but it's fun, but it's about us. You know, it's very inward looking. And that's Christmas, the holiday. But then there's also Christmas, the holy happening, the holy day, right? And that holy happening has a different twist to it. It says that Christmas has to be about more than us, right? It has to be about those extras too. Now, You do have to stop and ask sort of the question, though. So why would we say people who aren't part of the story are worth listening to? In fact, how do we even listen to them if they're not in the story? Well, I think this is one of the interesting things that the Bible does, all right? So think about the Bible as a document. It wasn't like someone sat down and thought about the whole thing and wrote it and kind of have a story from start to finish and, you know, wraps everything up, make sure it's all, you know, it's a messy work. And it seems to be kind of its own self-correcting thing. These people that were entrusted with something that was bigger than they could even imagine, and they didn't even know what they were actually the caretakers of or what it all meant. And somehow the messiness of that tends to include and turn us back on the things that need to be heard but never even got said. Let me give you a couple examples of these signals or these hints that we get. So one of the Gospels, one of the stories about the life of Jesus is written by John. The very last two sentences of his whole book about Jesus are these. Now, there are many other things that Jesus did. If they are all written down one by one, I suppose that the whole world could not hold the books that would be written. If that isn't an invitation to wonder about what wasn't said, what is, right? Can we start exploring what is beyond that? And then there's this signal, the very last verse, again, of the very last psalm, these songs from the Old Testament of the Bible, the very last one. So it's the very last verse of the very last psalm in the Bible. It says, let everything that has breath praise Yahweh. Let everything that has breath praise Yahweh. Yahweh, it's, your Bible probably says Lord. Lord is just a way of saying the name of God, which in Hebrew was written Yahweh, which means, that name means, I am who I am. Let everything that has breath, not just the people like you, not just the people who know your language, not just the people that go to your church, not just the people that you're comfortable with, that are on your in crowd, but let everything, not even only everyone, but let everything that has breath praise, be connected with, weave their lives with, I am who I am. Is that an expansive view that takes us beyond what is just there in front of us or not? I mean, even the voices that weren't heard need to be listened to. Kind of reminds me of our vision as Fabric. Quite often we say that we are mostly made up of people who aren't here yet. The minute we forget that, we lose our vision. And we think everything we do is for us. It's not. It needs to be outside directed. It's likewise God, Christmas, this message of hope and of possibility and of love, it always has its eyes fixed on the one who is hopeless, that feels like there is no possibility, that is without love, and it cannot rest until they find it. It has its eyes roaming for the person who has not been touched by that hope, by that possibility, by that love. It's like Jesus said, the coin that's lost on the floor that the woman won't stop sweeping till she finds it. It's like the shepherd who's got 99 sheep all taken care of, but there's one missing, and I will be tireless until I can find that. It always includes the one that isn't there yet, the one, the extra. So Christmas is, this is on your outline, the Christmas isn't a cultural holiday. It is a cosmological announcement. I like to get multi-syllabic fill-ins for you guys. Yeah, I mean, that's just a fancy way of saying Christmas is really an announcement that things are not like we think they are. The world is different, and this is how you're going to figure it out, all right? And so Christmas announces a turning away from our inward thinking, our inward seeing, inward hearing way of looking at the world, which seems safe, it seems comfortable, and instead it tugs us towards this outward thinking, outward seeing, outward hearing thing that probably feels a little scary. It feels kind of vulnerable, all right? It's asking us to pay attention to those extras. The people who are outside of your personal story, but are essential to the full story that you actually are a part of. And it says, those people, that big world out there, it is not your threat, it is your promise. That's the announcement of a cosmological change that is there for us. And so as it is telling us this, As we miss that, when we miss that announcement, we're really missing something from our lives, our world. Things aren't going to work for us. So this announcement is telling you a couple of things. A couple of things that aren't big enough about the way we're dealing with the world. And one is that your world is not big enough. One of the things, and I think this is really happening today, is that we think our world is already too big. We want to make it smaller. We somehow think that sharing the world with other people is going to take something away from us. We're going to lose something. But listen to those angels, right? The Midrash was bringing this up as well. What was their message? The angels said, right, that do not be afraid, for see, I bring you good news of great joy for all the people. What people? All the people. The people like us, the people not like us. All the people. Those in and those out. I mean, now that can be settling, and I know it is. We all have our level of tolerance for that which is familiar and that which is unfamiliar and that which is unknown. And when we get to the max of that, it's like hard for us to keep pushing. But this isn't a you gotta do it anyway message. This is a you wanna do it anyway, because those people, like I said, they are not your threat, they are your promise. This for all part of Christmas is a wake up that the world is not your competition. The world is not your competition, it is your team. It is your team. So we can really have a choice about this. I mean, if you want a smaller world, then, well, you can have your 1/7 billionth of the planet to yourself, or you can decide to share the whole thing with the rest of us. I mean, you can figure out everything on your own and try to survive that way, or we can all pool our knowledge and our dreams, our ideas and our imaginations and our talents and our artistry and our resources together and try to figure some things out together. I mean, you can be your own self-made man or woman, and you can have that stoic, defined, take care of yourself life, or you can decide to love and be loved and not avoid the hurt and the pain that might happen to go along with that. So these extras, they are Christmas's cosmological universe tipping announcement that your world isn't big enough, but also that your dreams aren't big enough. Your dreams aren't big enough. Our world is noted by lots of big dreamers. I mean, they make the front pages of the newspapers and our social media feeds constantly. But most of those dreams are about stuff that in the long run isn't going to matter. I think the dreams that maybe are even bigger are the ones that are perhaps a little bit simpler and a little bit more true to life, like the one that Mary was infected with. When Mary heard what the shepherds said, which we talked about a second ago, it says, and you may remember these words, Mary treasured all these words and pondered them in her heart. You know that kind of pondering, right? That's the stuff that keeps you awake all night. Yeah, it's not the real fun kind of pondering often. We call them dreams. You might actually want to call it a nightmare. She was dreaming of a bigger world and of a bigger life for herself and for her child. And it wasn't something, a dream that she was going to make happen, but something that she could let happen, something that she could discover, something that she was getting pulled towards. So, you know, I think we can tell that our dreams are too small, they're not big enough, when a couple of things are true. So your dreams aren't big enough. Even if they are enormous on human scale, they're not big enough if they're based on individualism, like me and mine. What can I do? What can I be? And, you know, if the world that you are trying to make this happen is about you and that's something for yourself, it can never be big enough for us. And that's a basic difference. There's a place for you as an individual. But it isn't your mode. It isn't about individualism. You as an individual is something you steward so that you can be a part of what all of us are a part. Your dreams are also not big enough, even if they're enormous, when they're based on comparison, all right? Comparison, I think, you know, we talk about it a lot here because it's one of the things that just eats us up and spits us out in our society. It's one of these things where we try to find our meaning by how we measure up, how we compare to the people around us. Are we doing as well or hopefully even a little bit better than the people around us? That is not the kind of dreams that get us anywhere, all right? There is a place for comparison, but it's to help us see differences so that we would know that there is something to learn, to help us think critically about the world and about what we are doing. It's not to judge or evaluate ourselves or others to decide whether we are worthy of something or we are not. So our dreams are also not big enough, even if they're enormous, when they are based on achievement and upon acquisition. I mean, finding your meaning in what you can do, achievement, or what you can have, acquisition, those are things that are outside of you. They are not things that are intrinsic to you. They are things in which you can never find actual meaning. It's just you can keep yourself busy with. They pass away. Yes, like all the rest of these, there's a place for achievement. There's a place for acquisition. But these are not your goal. They are simply tools that you use to achieve something that is much more important to you, something that is much more important to our world. So a question I think that those pose, if you want to think about, are my dreams big enough for what Christmas is trying to call me to? Are my dreams more than just about me? Are they about us? Do they not have to compete with others in order to happen? And are they bigger than something that I simply would do or something that I would have? What would your dream be that is bigger than those things? Something to debate with yourself over Christmas. So the world isn't big enough. If it's around these dreams or around this sense of our world being, you know, a little place, those are true. But there's one other thing I think that is also true. And these extras of Christmas are telling us that our impact isn't big enough in the world around us either, all right? Christmas simply is telling you, along with all the other characters there, that you make a difference. Nobody is a nobody. And if you think you are a mover and a shaker and that you really can make things happen, then know that Christmas is telling you that impact by itself is not big enough when it depends on power, okay? When it depends on power. And remember those shepherds. They are nobodies in the sense that we heard in the Midrash, but the fact that they had no power didn't stop them. The story, you know, goes on. Right. The shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all they had heard and seen as it had been told them. That glorifying and praising God is kind of Bible-y language for saying, we just witnessed something that changed everything for us. You have to know about this because the world is not what we thought it was before. All right? And then it says that the people that they went and talked to, even though they were just shepherds, paid attention. They're amazed. They stopped and they listened to them. And today, a couple thousand years later, we are still paying attention to that story. On Friday, I got my hair cut. Does it look okay? The stylist who cut my hair, she's been a young lady. She's been cutting my hair for a bunch of years. An amazing young woman. She just has this fresh, open, excited, and interested perspective on life. I've kind of seen some ups and downs in her. But she's just got a message, and she just wants people to be like that. And so I was telling her, I said, boy, I mean, you just got the perfect job to change the world. And she said, no, I mean, really. First of all, she said, people don't care. And two, she said, I'm just their hairstylist. They don't care what I think. And I said, I don't know. I think some people do care. Or at least they want to care. And I think you have people sitting in those chairs lined up all day long waiting to spend 15 minutes one-on-one with you. I mean, who else gets a chance like this to change the shape of people's lives and their worlds, not to mention their hair, you know? Even if it means all you're going to do is listen to them. Maybe you can be the one person who actually listened to them today. Jesus being born in a barn proved nothing. What it does announce, however, is that the person that isn't noticed, the person without power, maybe actually does have the power. You might have no position, no authority, no money, no prestige. But if you think that's what it requires for you to have impact in the world, then you probably won't have any. Your impact will be small. But if a child born in a barn can change the world, then maybe you can be a part of something that changes things as well. Okay, so your impact is not big enough when you think it depends on power, but it's also this last thing that I want to touch on today. Your impact is not big enough when it depends on what you do instead of what you make room for. Maybe you can't change the world, but maybe you can clear out some space to let it happen around you. Those words, make room for, maybe conjures up to you the inn in the story that didn't have room for Mary and Joseph. To just keep the record straight, that inn did nothing wrong. It was full, all right? Booked out. There was no way people could get in there at that point. But that isn't really what the story is trying to tell us, right? And the story isn't trying to tell us, you know, that, well, that inn was mean in the way it treated Mary and Joseph. The story isn't trying to tell us something about occupancy rates of hotels in middle-sized towns in first century Palestine. I mean, the story is trying to get us to ask a question, like, what does it mean when you're too busy? You are two rooms, so you don't have room in you so that the world-changing stuff that is happening around you can't have space there. I mean, I think that is the question that it's actually asking us to ask. So what can I make room for? I want to invite Bjorn Westgaard up. Bjorn, come on up. He's got a story to share with us. So we're all listeners, and it's easy for us to be anxious for you or whatever, or to be occupied with other things. Let's just all take a breath. Be present. Take one more. Be comfortable in your chair. And we thank you, Bjorn. If courage on a little finger snapping sometimes helps a little bit.
Okay.
Share with us, Bjorn.
Well, I did. I did tell Greg that I had a story for another Sunday, but that was after the fact. And then he's like, well, I bet you got another story, as he's wont to do. And So I work as a physician in an ER, and we see a little bit of everything. But over the course of my career, it's become really clear that stories are really central to what we do. So I'm going to give you an example, and don't worry, I'm going to change details so that we maintain privacy. But I'm working in a busy suburban ER, and a woman about my age comes in with her husband and her two kids, and she is having cramping in her toes, and she's nauseous, and her left hand is numb, and she's got back pain, and her chest is tight, and she's short of breath. And everybody, she's here with her entire family, and they're all very, very concerned, but there's also a lot of tension between them. So when you're training, when you're in residency, this kind of situation can be really kind of trying, because you're sort of like, well, the toes and the hand, and how do I put all this together? And then there's all this stuff kind of going on in the room. And as a resident, you're learning to make diagnoses and be really efficient, but you're seeing lots and lots of patients. And it's difficult to attend to that, and it takes a while to get good at it. And I didn't really realize what it was I wasn't able to put a name to it until maybe a year or two out of residency, and I was moonlighting in a rural ER, and I crossed paths with one of my classmates, and we were talking about how we were enjoying the job and how we'd really kind of developed as physicians, and he said to me, you know, it's really just the greatest pleasure to be able to talk to my patients. And he just meant meeting them and being able to talk a country mile. But really, for me, it was clear that listening and being able to sort of, there's more than the medicine. Listening and being able to tell the larger story of what's going on with someone's health and illness in the context of their life, and to even put all the pieces together, the medicine pieces and the life pieces, and to put them into a story that I could give back, was really most of what my job was. And so I pull up a chair with this woman who comes in, and I sit down, and the other staff are executing all the workup. We're getting an EKG and some blood tests and a chest x-ray. We're doing our due diligence to make sure she's not having a heart attack or something else. And I start talking with her, and it turns out that all this had really started with some back pain. And she had strained her back a couple weeks ago, and she'd gotten it worked up. And it wasn't something deathly serious. It was primarily muscular, but it left her more debilitated than she had expected. And it also left her feeling like no one in her household was really appreciating what she'd been going through, because she's the only one working. And she's the one sort of keeping the house and the kids' stuff all going. And she's thinking about, you know, how am I getting back to work? And her family is worried because it feels like this pain is coming between them and their mom. They're losing their mom to this pain. And her husband has really sort of identified that this has become something between them. And after a rough day all around, this day that she came in, there had been some yelling at home, and she'd had a twinge of pain, and she's thinking, am I ever going to be able to get back to work? And she started feeling really worried, and all these symptoms started, and then the family was paying attention, and here they are, and they're all deathly afraid. So I sit there. Pardon me when I tell patient stories. Sometimes I get choked up. And we talk through what's been going on with her back pain and her functioning and this whole family dynamic that's come about around it. And I start to just tell her how all these symptoms tie together. And her workup comes back normal. And her panic attack resolves. And the tension in the room resolves. I've told her the story of what's going on with her body. I have heard the story of what's going on before she came in. And then we all start working on the story of how we're going to get her better, and we're going to get her family better. So I'm going to do referrals. I'm going to have her see a back doc and physical therapy. But it's going to start with walking and talking. If we talk about how she and her husband are going to start walking and talking every day, and her kids are there, and I say, you guys are going to do this too. I make them pinky swear me. They're going to put their phones down, and they're going to walk with mom. So a lot of what I do is just stringing the symptoms together and telling people the story of their bodies. But that's just the plumbing. And the more you do the job, the more you realize that stringing those symptoms in the context of a life and really listening to the larger story of what you're being told and trying to provide some perspective and make some sense of it and then to give it back to someone. Because I, in the scheme of things, don't have a whole lot of power to change people's health and illness. I can take care of a crisis, but they are really the ones who hold all of the levers in their hands, and to take what is being told and to put it together into a story and to reflect that back gives them something that they can do with and become better themselves. And that ends really over the course of my career what I've figured out my job is.
Your impact, no matter how enormous you think it is never big enough as long as you think it's something you do, not something that you're making room for. It's worth being about what this Christmas message is asking us to be about. I hear Bjorn saying he's standing on the side. He's the extra. It's not him, but he's looking at that and saying, this is what I hear. Do you hear what I hear? And together they kind of find the message that emerges, which is a story. that is a story that can be about a life that has that hope and that has that possibility, has that love in it. On Christmas Eve, Christmas morning, whatever your tradition is, you are going to be gathering around a story, around the story. You are all going to be like characters in the nativity scene, right? I mean, the nativity scene is your tree, and you're gathered around it, and each of you is there with your part of it. Now, whether you actually retell that story or don't even think about it doesn't really matter. You are gathered around that story, and it will have its way with you. But you're also gathered around a bunch of other stories. Every person there that is gathered with you comes with their stories as well, and those are as real and as tangible and as full of the hopes and the dreams of God and all of us as anything else can be. And then all the other stories surround you too, these stories of this big world that surrounds us that can feel too big, but it's not big enough yet. And we're always going to be part of that. So that is the holy day that we are coming up on. And this cosmological announcement that the world is not what we feared, it is what we hoped for. So hope for it and listen for it and tell that story as well. All right, let's let it be so.
Thanks for listening. We hope you take this conversation and keep it going. If we are adding value to your life, we appreciate your support of this work so we can engage more people in these conversations that matter for their real lives too. You can do that at fabricmpls.com/give. We'd also love to have you join us any Sunday morning at 10:30 at Field Community School in Minneapolis. That's at 4645 4th Avenue South. There are opportunities for kids of all ages to connect to. Learn more by searching Fabric Minneapolis.